Attention, human scum.
Hello, this is Sylvester McCoy. I welcome you to this style. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, God, I'm done.
Hello, I'm Bonnie Langford.
My name is Barnaby Kay.
Hello, I'm Rob Shaman.
I'm Annette Badland.
This is Miles Richardson.
This is Peter Purvis.
This is Sally Novette.
Hi there, everybody. Sophie Aldred here, a.k.a. Ace.
This is Sean Carlson.
Hi, this is Andrew Smith.
This is Jeffrey Beavers.
Hi, this is Joe Kramer.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Briggs.
Hello, this is Tim Treelaw.
Hello, this is Lisa Barrowman.
I'm Katie Manning.
Hello, I'm Benji Clifford.
Hello there, this is Jan Chappell.
I'm Michael Troughton.
I'm Maureen O'Brien.
Hi, this is Stephen Greif.
I'm Nicola Bryant.
The sirens, not the silence of audio. Actually, that's quite a good one, the silence of audio. Hello, this is Sylvester McCoy. Welcome to the silence of audio.
Hello, I am Yasmin Bannerman.
Hello, my name's Nigel Fairs.
Hello, this is Louise Jameson.
I'm Ken Bentley.
Hello, I'm Simon Fisher-Becker, and you're listening to the sirens of... Oh, shit. What was it?
Hello, Z-List Doctor Who bore Toby Haydock here.
Hello, my name's Tom Price.
Hello, I'm Colin Baker. Of course I am, whether you like it or not. And you are watching The Sirens of Audio. Keep watching. It's good.
G'day audiophiles, this is The Sirens of Audio, the show that explores the universe of Doctor Who on audio. I'm Dwayne.
And I'm Philip. G'day Dwayne, g'day audiophiles.
G'day Philip. We're back to cyberspace again. It's kind of weird after the last couple of weeks.
We are, but we're going to be back not in cyberspace in 10 minutes time, so
yes.
what are you talking about?
We've had a pretty amazing couple of weeks and it's not all over yet for Janet Fielding Down Under. So how are you feeling so far about how things have been going? We've just come back as we're recording from the Hobart event a couple of days ago. How are you feeling, Philip?
I'm feeling exhausted, but also on a high. So I think, we had two amazing events. I think everyone who's been to them is just raving about them. For those of you in the private Facebook group of Sirens of Audio, you can go look at all the Sydney photos. I've uploaded about 200 photos there. Just today, and I'm going to put some Tasmanian ones in tomorrow or the next day. So if you don't belong to the private Sirens of Audio Facebook group, ask to join, and you can have access to all of them. It was just sensational. I mean, she has been charming and friendly and telling amazing stories on stage, off stage. having Rove in Hobart was just a joy. He's such a huge fan. So that was,
isn't he a fanboy?
He's a fanboy. It was great that Janet was able to shock him with some stories that he didn't know, and he was truly shocked about a couple of things. so there's been lots of fun.
Excellent. And congratulations to us. This is episode 150 of the podcast.
Oh, well, congratulations, Dwayne. 150. That makes me feel old.
And we had to do something special for this episode. So coming up soon, we're going to be chatting with Rove McManus, probably Australia's best known Whovian, and we're going to be getting all his recollections of fandom and talking about Whovians and his appearance in Big Finish, and so we've got all that to come.
For the first time ever, a live interview in a room.
Oh yeah, we're actually sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
Can you believe it? And we squeezed that in between the events on the Hobart day, so we're really grateful to Rove to be able to give us some time. So thank you, Rove.
Yeah, he's super generous.
Before we do that, do you know what, Philip?
No, what, Dwayne?
Well, what I usually like to do is jump down the rabbit hole right now. But what we did in Sydney as part of our discussion around a bit after, I think it was after lunch, we got up on stage and we did a rabbit hole topic with the Sydney audience at Janet Fielding's event there. So we might cross to that right now. So, Philip, if someone came up to you and said, what is the Sirens of Audio? What a and I have seen this online. What a weird name for a podcast. What would you say? See, this is, I put him on the spot with these questions. He didn't know that was coming.
Yeah, because he never warns me what's coming. So the Sirens of Audio, it's a review, recommendation, interview podcast of Doctor Who and related mediums. You say it much better, and you say it every week, and every week I think I should learn that because you just rolls off your tongue.
Well, I say we explore the universe of Doctor Who in the audio medium.
Yep, so and I say, hi, Dwayne. So you can see what my intelligence levels are like. My levels are, hi, Dwayne. I can manage that.
So we don't just talk about Big Finish. We talk about sometimes Target as well. So recently we spoke to the commissioning editor of BBC Audio, Michael Stevens.
Yes.
That's his name, isn't
well
it?
Done.
So he talked to us about what was coming up for the rest of the year, particularly this year's the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who. So there's lots of special things happening and being released throughout this particular year. But yeah, as I said, if you check out the website, sirensofaudio.com, you can check out our podcast. Yep. There's a couple of other Australian...
We would kind of say we would love you to subscribe to the YouTube channel. That would be really helpful. And subscribe because the more people, the better. And just check out some of our interviews. Maureen O'Brien, it's the only podcast she's ever done. We got her. And Peter Purvis. So we are working our way through all the companions and the doctors.
We had Bonnie Langford last year and you wanted to talk musicals.
Yes, I know. Time. So yes, Bonnie Langford. There's a half an hour musical podcast in there which we didn't release with me talking musicals with Bonnie. She's a lot of fun. So yeah, please check out. But also just in terms of, for those of you who are interested in writing Doctor Who, listen to some of the writers because they give lots of tips in terms of how to start writing for Doctor Who, what they're looking for, all those bits and pieces. Good stuff, etc. So you're about to get your phones out in a moment for the quiz. Feel free to check out. Someone's on already. Who's on already? Adam, he's fast.
So one of the features of our podcast we usually go every week. We're having a couple of weeks off. I think we're quite busy enough to have a couple of weeks off, Philip. But we usually do what we call a rabbit hole topic because Doctor Who fans like to dive into different tangents. So while everyone's logging into their phones, what I want to do is I want to do a live rabbit hole topic and I want to get some audience interaction, if possible, on a subject. So what I normally do is I throw a question to Philip that he doesn't know about, and he...
I'm really not stupid. I really have no idea what's coming up. So I know sometimes I just sound, what on earth am I saying? But that's because I'm not pre-warned ever.
Right. So we have some people in the audience who may have a theory on what question I come up with, and I haven't thought of it yet, and I've just thought of a question. So let's jump down the rabbit hole. And I'm freezing there for
And we're going up
purposes.
The rabbit hole again rather than down the rabbit hole.
Oh, down the rabbit hole. Okay, so my question to you, Philip, is...
Oh, no.
We have done this one before, so the audience may not know what your views are. But in Big Finish, a lot of the older doctors who are not with us anymore have been recast. So I don't know how many of you in the audience have actually heard any of those recast renditions put out by Big Finish Audio. But what's your opinion? What was your opinion when you first heard of recast? I suppose the big one was Tim Treloar as the third Doctor. What were your initial... I think you were trepidatious.
Actually,
first.
You know what my original opinion was. Yeah, I was certainly not impressed at the idea of recasting the Doctors. I wasn't impressed about recasting the Doctors. Thank you, Dallas. Dallas is...
I was just worried that they would try and do impersonations.
Yes.
Hang on. Let me just come down.
Go and ask the audience.
I want to get your thoughts too. Dallas, tell us what you think.
As I said, the biggest worry is about trying to be doing impersonations rather than creating a feeling of the doctor. Luckily, I think most of them, they've not gone down the impersonation track. But I think occasionally, I feel like you're just trying a bit too hard, some of them, occasionally. And I think that's where a director would say, come back a bit, I think. So occasionally, I think it's just getting a bit too close to being an impersonation, and that puts me off because I'm thinking, oh, yes, it is the third Doctor, but it's not John Pertwee.
That's how you felt. Is that how you still feel after hearing them?
occasionally I do feel that occasionally you've got, they've got to be really well directed to make sure that, that they don't get caught up in trying to be the actor rather than the character.
It's a good view. Be the third Doctor without being John Pertwee. Yep. Good. What do other people think?
John.
And I want someone at the very front to be the next person to make
Cranky
running.
They've been recasting. They've been recasting the Doctor since 1983 for the 20th anniversary.
Yep. Good point.
So, you know, they've started then. Why stop now?
Yeah, and I love Richard Herndale as the Doctor. I mean, he's not William Hartnell, and he's not really the first Doctor, but I really enjoy the performance. I love the Five Doctors.
So,
anybody else got a view about recasting?
Right down the middle. Going to get my exercise in today.
I just want to say, like, I'm so used to Star Wars for, like, the past few decades, like, recasting actors for their medium. So it's like, you know, it's inevitable that Doctor Who does it, but I guess because Doctor Who has, like, this high respect where every actor is, like, you know, it's the actor who portrays that character is the definite article. It's so hard to detach that actor from that role. So I guess if they can find some respectful way of recasting, then it's absolutely fine. But even then, if the actor does a good enough impersonation, then should be okay.
Yeah, it is the right balance. And you've got people like Coleshaw, who does the most amazing, you'd hard to tell the difference. But the fact that they've got Elizabeth Sladen's daughter, I think Elizabeth Sladen's daughter does a lovely job. And she's not doing her mum, but you can actually hear her mum in it at times. So those sort of, and I think Michael Troughton, too, has been the one who impressed me the most last year. Michael just sounds like his dad. But it was just, yeah, but also just wonderful stories. And it's okay, he doesn't sound like he's dead because of when it's taking place in the sort of alternate timeline for people who are following. Because the Michael Troughton stuff is all Patrick Troughton, the second Doctor, doing jobs for the Time Lords before they regenerate him. So it's sort of a special season slipped in before John Pertwee, which is clever.
So interesting that Star Wars is brought up. Now we've got Doctor Who going to Disney this year. Australians love the fact that it's gone to Disney, don't we? In The Mandalorian, they did some...
Actually, you can say, who is... I'm going to ask, happy about Disney, sad about Disney, just don't care. Who's happy it's going to Disney?
It's not going to Disney.
Sorry. Funding and going onto the streaming services of Disney. Who's
like everyone else who puts money in, they get to see notes. But Russell D. Davis' company, Bad Wolf, has the last say, other than the BBC... Disney will say, we'll give you some extra money, but they've got no right to say, I want this character in it, or you've got to change this. All they can give is notes.
I think the main...
That's what happened with the Canadians, when they put money in, the CBC, they also got notes about it. So it's not only occurring now, it was occurred before, because they're putting money in it and they want some, not say, but they want to know what's happening.
I don't think it's the fact that Disney's involved in that level, but I think in Australia, I think some people might have issue with the only way to see new Doctor Who is if you go through the streaming service. I've got a comment from Joel.
Oh, yeah, a bit of controversy.
It should be free and it should be on the ABC.
Bit louder so we can send this on.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, the reality is, TV said, oh, there's Adam.
As someone who works at the ABC, it's devastating, but they treated Doctor Who abominably. They showed it in very poor definition at whatever time they felt like, and the fact that, you know, someone who's prepared to play it in 4K, in surround sound, so people who have those kind of systems can watch it, you know, if I just feel like the ABC have not treated Doctor Who as well as it should have been treated. It's a premier show with amazing special effects that people spend a lot of time on, and they show it in, it looks like 17 pixels on iView at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, Adam, I've actually made, in my tweets, I've made similar points, which is nostalgically, the ABC for me, because I grew up every afternoon, 6 o'clock, 6:30, watching Doctor Who. There's a nostalgia there that I feel like I love it. But when you actually do look at what they did in the later years to the show, how they mixed up episodes, how they put on the afternoon show, where it was treated with a bit of contempt, the ABC haven't really cared for it. And also, they put axes through all the productions. Anyhow, that's another story.
Let me take it back to Disney, and I'm thinking about Star Wars, the Star Wars comment, Mandalorian Series 2. Does anyone remember the climax of Series 2, The Mandalorian? We had some deepfake technology in there. Is that what we could do with Doctor Who? Would anyone be happy with a Doctor who's no longer with us being brought back in that way? Do you have any thoughts on that? What are your thoughts, Philip?
I don't know. But once, I mean, I was okay, when they recast the Doctors, I was totally nonplussed about that. But now I've actually listened to them, I actually like them. So at the moment, I'm thinking, oh, wouldn't want that to happen. But can I say, I trust Russell T. Davies. And whatever he does, I'm prepared to give it a good go because I really trust what he does. And there's been stuff. I mean, Billy Piper. I mean, who wants a 16-year-old pop star as a companion? And wasn't Rose one of the most amazing companions ever? So there's times in which I look at decisions being made and thinking, well, that seems daft. But when you actually stop, give it a go, usually you can trust the people making decisions. And Russell T, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he didn't make any bad decisions in his entire run, so I'm going to trust him. And, you know, how on earth are David Tennant the 14th Doctor? Seems stupid in some ways. I mean, I love David Tennant, but I'm trusting it because, you know, he's never let me down before. I'm going to go for it. And if he decided to put deepfake in, then I'll trust him. But I do love what Chibnall did in The Power of the Doctor by bringing back all those Doctors who were all old, and he left them, put them in silly robes.
It just worked, again. Didn't it?
It just worked. Mm. And then once again, the nostalgia there was just wonderful.
Just the point about that is that talking about Mandalorian, it's already been done by Mandalorian. If Doctor Who does it, it looks like you're just ripping it off. You've got to be careful. If something comes in and is nice, you can't then do it again for Doctor Who because they get that aspect. For example, when Russell came and we had this feeling this is something Buffy-esque, everyone wanted the Doctor Who to do a musical because Buffy done a musical. And that to me would have been just ripping off further the whole Buffy feeling by getting too close to source material.
Yeah. You could also say that Mandalorian is ripping off itself because it had already been done in Rogue One, hadn't it?
And Doctor Who did those great deep fakes of William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton for the 40th anniversary spinning round in that vortex for the Rani story. I mean, yeah, you can't get better deep fakes than that.
What's that called? Dimensions in Time.
Dimensions in Time. I mean, yeah. Those deep fakes of William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton, you couldn't tell they weren't the real Doctors.
We've got a big screen. Why don't we watch Dimensions in... No, we won't do that.
Can I just say, I love Dimensions in Time. I know it's garbage, but boy, I love it.
That's good fun. All right, we are back up out of the rabbit hole. How was that for you, Philip? Did you enjoy that?
I did. It's nice to not always be the only one put on the spot, let me tell you.
Yes. It was great to get that audience. I think it would have kept going too if we didn't stop it.
Oh, it was only the fact that we had so much more to do that we had to end it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sure there'll be another rabbit hole topic when Sophie's in town in 3 weeks' time.
Yes, so the 13th of May, Saturday the 13th of May, Sophie Aldred will be appearing at the same venue in Parramatta. You can check out the details at sirensofaudio.com. Grab your tickets there. There are still some VIP tickets if you want the full experience, which includes photos and autographs too, as well as a premium dinner. You can just head over to the website for that.
And guys, if you're keen for us to bring out more guests, we need people to be coming out and supporting the ones we got. So yes. we would love to be able to bring out more people. There's more people who are keen to come out. But
there
we
are.
We need to know that if we bring people out, people will come.
Yeah, absolutely. So Janet was the first one. Sophie will give us an overall idea of, because the feedback we've had from our first couple of events has been really, really positive. People have been enjoying the smaller, intimate day events with one Doctor Who focused guest rather than the big, massive supernovas, comic cons, that kind of thing. Did you find that, Philip?
Yeah, I think the fact that people got so much opportunity to talk and to chat and to ask questions personally, it's been everyone's walked away feeling like they've known the guest more personally in a one-to-one way. And that's what we wanted.
Yeah, yeah. And you just don't get that experience in the huge events. You sort of put through a process line and, you know, you get your autograph and off you go. But our events are not like that. So
particularly in Hobart, the Hobart audience was approaching me. Guys that I've known in Tassie for years have just said, thank you so much for bringing someone to Tassie. It was a lovely change to not have to go to the mainland for an event like this. So that was something that I personally found really encouraging, was the gratitude that these guys felt. But as you said, Philip, we need to continue to get the numbers and people need to be involved so that we can continue to do it.
Yep.
So with that said, we're going to have our chat now with Rove McManus. If you're in Australia, you know who he is. But if you only listen to Big Finish, you would have heard him in his role. Well, he's only been in one story in Big Finish. It was for the Sixth Doctor range last year. It was released in a box set called Water Worlds. It was the very first story that that introduced the new character to the Sixth Doctor and Mel, called Hebe. So I'm going to throw in a trailer for that now, and we'll be back in a moment with Rove McManus.
Hebe Harrison.
It's nice to meet you. Do you work here on the rig?
Well, not exactly. Don't you know? Aren't you here to get us all home?
All? So there are more people here?
Well, yeah. There's 7 of us left.
Oh, everyone else has already gone home?
No. There are 7 of us left alive.
From Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, The Sixth Doctor Adventures, Water Worlds.
An ocean on the moon.
Oh, Doctor, I'm speechless.
You're still talking.
Close as I get. Brilliant.
Does this belong to you? Are you part machine?
More like part action figure. I come with my own accessories.
My friend Hebe is an expert on marine life.
And you?
I'm an expert on everything else.
Particularly blowing his own trumpet. You mean I'm wearing a stolen body? What if the others find out?
Is coming.
Get off me! Get off me!
I'm coming.
Help! Help!
And then there was one.
Big Finish, for the love of stories.
Thanks, Will, for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, why is it that we are together?
Well, firstly, I'm very excited to be your first in-person guest. So, thank you very much for that.
Yeah, it's our 150th episode as well.
Well, congratulations to you both. What a wonderful milestone to celebrate with you. We are in Hobart, Tasmania, Australia, for a wonderful day today with Janet Fielding, who, of course, played Tegan Jovanka in Doctor Who, and it was a wonderful event today with an In Conversation, which I hosted with her, with a Q&A session afterwards, and then fans got the chance to have a meet and greet with her.
So have you had a good day?
I've had a great day. I was saying to Janet just before we walked out, it's a wonderful setup that the day has, because it's not like a big convention. It's just her, and if someone wants to commit to all of the events during the day, they get to see the interview with her, maybe get to ask a question if they feel they want to do that. But then they also get a more personalized experience later, where they can get a photo and an autograph at a separate event. And then again, if they really want to, then there's a dinner where you can get, that's like a very intimate situation to find yourself in with a member of the Doctor Who cast.
Yeah.
So you're getting, rather than jumping around from one event to the other with different people talking about different things, you get a really intense but rewarding experience with one person, which is not normally how conventions go. So it's nicer to have it this way, I think.
It is. And we're doing the same thing with Sophie in a few weeks' time.
Oh, wow. Great.
So, yeah. Sophie Aldred, come along and see Sophie. We'd love to have you there.
Yeah.
In Sydney. Now,
she'll have the jacket. It's her wardrobe.
It probably is her wardrobe. We'll see what she wears. I'm curious to see what she wears.
Well, I think that's what she was sprung for. much like Janet was talking about today with a friend who heard that she was in Cardiff and immediately led to you're back on the show. So apparently Sophie it had the Ace bomber jacket. It was hers. So she had it hanging up in a wardrobe at home, and it was her daughter or one of her children who called her in a slight panic going, something's happened to your jacket. Where's your jacket? It's not here. And so that's where she had to come clean. Like, yeah, I've got it with me for no particular reason.
Just so, yeah. Feel like wearing it out today.
Yeah, so I would hope that she's wearing it for sure.
So I'm curious to know, Rove, where your fandom started. Because everyone's got their own...
Yeah, my fandom journey. Started... I can't say exactly when it was, because I do have my first memories being the pyramids of Mars and being terrified of the lumbering mummies.
How old do you think you were?
See, I think I must have been around 10 or 11. So,
because there was the 1978 repeat, which went through.
But I would have, see, that's the thing. I would have only been, for the Tom Baker era at its zenith, I was too young. So I really am a
repeat.
A Davison
okay.
child.
Yep.
So you think from, what's that, 81 to 84, that puts me right in that sort of 8, 9, 10 age bracket, which is right where you want to be. I remember seeing in a newspaper that Tom Baker was leaving. And for some reason, I knew he was Doctor Who, so there still must have been something at that point that I had watched the show.
Mm.
So I must have been watching somehow before Peter came in, because I remember seeing in the newspaper, yeah, Tom was leaving, and that was seen as a big deal. And then Peter's announcement made me start watching All Creatures Great and Small, because I knew he was on that. So I got to...
That's a wonderful show too, isn't it?
I know, it was... The life of vets. How wonderful. So I do remember watching Legopolis in real time, as it would have been. So I would say that's probably my first memory.
And this is in like the Perth, watcher, like, isn't it?
Yeah, so I was watching it in Perth. So in obviously in Australia, it would be in the evenings, like 6:30, I think it was, like right on before the news. So it was in that sort of transition time between all the kids' stuff in the afternoon, then you'd get like the goodies or something.
Goodies and then
Doctor Who, and then into it. So we were allowed to watch that before dinner. It was kind of the only window of time we were allowed to watch television. It was like homework's done while Mum's getting dinner ready. We were allowed to watch, you know, an hour or so of television. So Doctor Who came in. So, I was in it at that point. And I do remember distinctly when Colin Baker came in for the Twin Dilemma, having a very intense conversation with my friends the next day at school about what we thought about the new Doctor. And then in my, must have been, there was the key to Time book that came out, which I think was for the 20th
anniversary.
Or 20th? The 21st. 20th.
Oh, no, Celebration, you're right. Celebration was the 20th, Key to Time was 21st.
Yes, yeah. So it was a big, thick book. But by today's standards, one of those ones that was like a $75, $100 book type of thing. Peter big, thick. Yeah, yeah, and it was just...
I've got it. I read it from cover to cover.
Well, so did I. And the that's when I discovered the history of the Doctor. Because I try to think, well, when did I know that regenerations even existed? How did I even... first hear about Hartnell, because none of that existed back then, and certainly not in that era where they would talk about previous incarnations that much.
Mm.
I don't think at that stage I would have seen the Three Doctors or anything like that. Definitely. I think there is a reference in Earthshock. I think they show here's the other faces we've seen to the Doctor. But anyway, I got this book, and I wanted it for my birthday. And at the time, I think it was $25, which back then was a lot of money. And I remember my mum saying to me, I will get it for your birthday if you promise me that this is something you will read. It is a book that you actually want.
And she regrets it now?
Probably, yes. But I still have it. It's in great condition because I took very, very good care of it. But I got it out and started to read it again for the 50th anniversary and was reading through it just going, what kind of kid? Like it's really dense. Laborious, dense, mundane facts about shoot days and casting and, you know, ratings and things like that. So I don't know that I properly read it back then, but I just loved the art. It was full of fan art and things like that. And
the two things that stood out to me were Sharda popped out at me.
Yes.
I wanted to know more about that.
Yes.
And I think I wrote to the ABC asking them to screen Celestial Toymaker. That was the one I wanted to see more than any.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it sounded good then.
Yeah,
because back then you're like, well, surely you can just do that, right?
Yep.
And I remember, again, it must have been for the 20th, the ABC shop, which used to be a thing,
yes.
In the city in Perth, in the Carillion Arcade, had a Dalek on display. And I just kept wanting to go into the city as much as I could, and I would just go in and just... I seem to recall just kind of dragging everybody I knew in there, or dragging my parents in there, so I could just go in and look at a real Dalek, and that was amazing.
Okay, and I do want to go back to your fandom, but in terms of your career, because you've had a huge career in television in Australia and in production and that, do you think that book had an influence on where you were going to head?
Well, possibly. At that point, I hadn't discovered comedy as yet. I think I just liked the sci-fi fantasy element of Doctor Who. I really, really loved it. And prior to there being any like other merchandise or anything that you could get with it, I used to like draw pictures of each of the Doctors, and then I would cut them out and like make little paper dolls, really, just sort of moving them around, because you couldn't get, you know... There was no character options figures or anything back in the day. So I don't
think... This is so freaky similar to my life.
Really? Oh, my God.
Scaring the life out of me. And I've still got some of those pictures I used to draw and TARDIS.
I found
some recently and went, oh, good grief, I've still got them. And
I had a
cigar... Dalek was so out of proportion.
I had an old cigar box, metal cigar box that my grandfather gave me. And the lid eventually came off it. But it was this beautiful big tin... And I would put all my drawings that I would do. I called them my cutouts. So any TV show that I liked or other characters that I would come up with, drawing was my first passion. I was a quiet, introverted kid. The idea of performing was not on my radar at all. So I'd cut these things out and I'd put them in this box. And I remember going through a really regretful stage in my life when I hit my... late teens, probably just as I was finishing up high school. And I just had this thought of just, you know, I'm not a child anymore, and so I must do away with my childish things. And I don't think I threw them out. I think I just burnt them like so that they were gone and like the ashes, I don't know. But I do remember just getting rid of them all. And to this day, it's like if I could go back and redo anything in my life, it would just be to keep that tin box, because I think in there now would be some absolute treasures.
Mm.
So yeah, I didn't have any desire to be in television or performing or production or anything like that. And I hadn't really thought much about the behind the scenes of how shows were made yet, despite having read that book.
Okay, so often people with Doctor Who focus on multimedia. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like there was lots of shows you were equally passionate about, or was Doctor Who the one?
Probably Doctor Who was the one. I was very much into animation. I loved Looney Tunes in particular. I think that's where my love of comedy came from, because I loved the Chuck Jones era of Looney Tunes cartoons, like the Rabbit Season, Duck Season trilogy. That's where I realised what comedy could be, I think. That was my first look at it. I also liked... I liked puppetry, like the Muppet Show. I think I always liked the sort of creative, the more creative way of expressing yourself through things like animation or puppetry. I think it was because it was the most creative outlet. And surprisingly, there wasn't much, like I wasn't into Star Trek. It wasn't, for some reason, I don't quite put Doctor Who in a sci-fi box.
Yep.
Because there's not much other sci-fi that I'm into. And if it is...
And was Blake 7 a bit too old for you?
Yeah, I missed Blake 7.
You're a bit young.
We used to watch things like The Tomorrow People and stuff like that was some of that was too scary for me. I do remember the Tomorrow People, the theme song alone, although the Doctor Who theme is pretty confronting, but not the Peter Howell version of it is
it's
wonderful and upbeat. Yeah, I remember getting the Doctor Who music cassette tape.
Yep.
Yeah, me too.
And it was one of those things of, I used to love, I would just like listen and re-listen and re-listen to the theme song over, because it was the extended bit that had sort of the middle eight where it would go up a little, like up an octave, and you'd get the sort of... The middle eight, is which they work back in the modern theme, they sort of put that in a little bit more now.
And then the Sea Devils would cut straight.
Oh, it was so abrupt. It was just like, whoa, what is that about? But then I was watching Earthshock recently for the Janet interview, and all those clangs and sound effects are like, oh, that's so evocative for me, because it was on that album. And again, the cover art for that was all five of the Doctors, and it was kind of, I must admit, the first time I can't remember exactly when it was, the first time I ever saw a picture of William Hartnell or any footage of him, I was quite surprised, because I thought he was larger than he was, because on the cover art, it's the shot from the gunfighters, which they just usually sort of draw it without the hat on. And because he's sort of looking down, it kind of gives him this, not even double chin, but like a triple chin kind of look, because he's sort of squashing his neck to look down at the camera, which is a lower shot. So it had me thinking he was a larger man than he actually was. He was actually obviously quite slight. So there's all those little things that I do remember. But as to putting it all in some kind of timeline, it's hard, because I didn't know, there wasn't much to sort of match it with. And also I don't know at this point, looking back, how day and date we were with everything back then.
It is all over the place, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you went on to a huge career, and still have a huge career, for Australia in terms of presenting, interviewing, comedy is sort of what you're known for, and you even spent time in LA with your own shows there too. Where was Doctor Who bubbling? Was it, did it have any place in any of those things?
Yeah, it was always there. It was a strange thing that I only got to interview my first doctor that I got to interview was Peter Capaldi while he was Doctor Who. In the middle of his run, he came down for the world tour, but then there was the exhibition that came with it, and they did a convention in Sydney out at Fox Studios at the Horton Pavilion.
Yep.
So there was Stephen Moffat came. It was, I'm trying to think what episode had gone to air, because there was an episode that had gone to air while they were doing one of their Q&As, and they were saying, for everyone who has watched it already, don't spoil it. Okay. So they were in town to just promote Doctor Who. It was almost like it was, because we didn't
get... So that's not the Deep Breath one, when they first came?
No. Because that was just... he did a Q&A at the Opera House.
There was was it the State Theatre?
It was maybe State Theatre. There was a photo shoot with the TARDIS out in front of the Opera House so they could get the Harbour Bridge. And then they didn't really do much else.
No.
This time round, they came in, and it was almost like we were getting the second wave of whatever the big 50th celebrations were at the Excel Arena in London when they did the 50th. So they did like a travelling show version of that. So that was my first time seeing props and wardrobe and like actually attending a convention, and it was wonderful. And I was working on a radio show at the time, and which was not fun at all. And I used to butt heads with my producers because I had very firm views on what I wanted to do creatively, and they disagreed. They felt that they knew better for what worked for them. So it was often a real problem. And I had a friend of mine who was writing for the show, a comedy friend of mine who was also into Doctor Who. And I was just grumbling with him, just going like, you know, you've got the cast of Doctor Who are in town. So it was Stephen Moffat, Peter Capaldi, I think Ingrid Oliver came, Sylvester McCoy, a few others. But there was, you know, there was enough to choose from. And I was like, we're not even getting anyone on the show. Like, I'm asking, and I haven't even heard anything back from them, that they're even interested, that they've even listened to my request. I was getting furious. And little did I know that they had actually planned, they had booked Peter Capaldi, but they wanted it to be a surprise. So that's why they weren't telling me. So as I'm unloading to my friend, he's just sort of quietly nodding his head, and then went to our producer and he said, you need to either make up a story or tell him what's happening, because he's getting quite incensed and he won't let it go. So apparently, that was the story. And then the producer came and said, oh, hey, just so you know, in case, I don't know if I've filled you in, but we put out the request to the Doctor Who people and they're too busy, couldn't make it. Yeah, because we're on early in the morning. And I was like, cool, that's fine. At least thanks for asking. So then I was able to let it go. And then little did I know that he was there. So he came to the studio. They'd set up a screen. We have like a big screen that you pull down. If you have a guest in the studio, you pull it down. So it's got the branding of the station behind it. We wouldn't normally have it up, but you pull it down for photos. So that was, I sort of just thought, oh, it's weird that we've pulled the screen down early. I don't know, like, anyway, I didn't think too much of it other than, well, that's unusual. Then we were doing the show, and then my co-host was bringing up my love for Doctor Who and how they were in town, and I started ranting about, you know, I can't be there and it's killing me and this show is great, and all she needed was for me just to say, hey, you like Doctor Who, so then she can say, well, guess what? And apparently I just was going on and on, and there's Capaldi in place. Like, he's been brought in. And then so she basically cut me off and then said, we'll turn around. And the screen slowly went up. And then I'm just seeing the shoes, legs. And then my friend, who was on the other side of the screen and had helped Peter get into place, said apparently the screen has come, like, to his waist. So it's just about to be the reveal of his face. And then at the last minute, Capaldi's just gone, oh, what? And reached into his jacket pocket, pulled out the sunglasses and put them on just as it perfectly timed to reveal his face with the sun. And I lost my mind. And the worst, and of course I've got photos and all the things I needed to get. The worst part of it was that because I didn't know he was coming,
you weren't prepped.
I was, and it's breakfast radio. So you just kind of, you know, dressed like a schlub most days. So I was in a bright yellow Where the Wild Things Are t-shirt. Nothing branded, nothing that's even just like a simple plain t-shirt or something. It's like bright yellow with one of the monsters from Where the Wild Things Are. So every photo I have with Peter Capaldi is in that outfit. But it was great because I'd never had the chance to interview anybody who had anything to do with Doctor Who. And so the first time to get to do that is with the current serving Doctor was amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I think because as I got older, the show obviously disappeared. The telemovie in 96, I had just moved to Melbourne. I wasn't really doing anything at that point. And then by the time I started my show, it hadn't quite kicked in yet. And so even when the classic Doctors would come to town, it just wasn't something that was on the radar. So somehow we've managed to avoid each other all those years, surprisingly. But then, yeah, of all the things, radio was not an enjoyable experience for me, but it did bring me close to Doctor Who.
You got good ratings.
We did, but it wasn't enough. Anyway, it's a long story. That's a story for another podcast.
Is that what spawned the idea for Whovians?
Yes.
Well, tell us about what Whovians is for people who are...
Well, for those who don't know, it's an after show. It's a Doctor Who after show. So I had been, when I was living in the States, I had a friend who did a show that was a companion show for the Walking Dead zombies show. And it kind of spawned a whole rise of this after show genre, they called it. And then a lot of podcasts came in that did similar sorts of things. So I was looking around at a period where the industry had changed from, if you had something that was niche, they weren't into it. You could, any idea that we had always had to be broad. Any sketch idea we had to be broad. You know, even guests, like you'd say, oh, there's this really cool, you know, at the time, cable show. We want to get this guy on. And the response would be, well, you know, how many people know that show? Nowadays, it's like, yeah, well, that's the cool thing, and so be it. So everything had come back around to being, well, niche is kind of what people want. So I thought, well, what's the most niche thing I can think of? Well, an after show for something, and wanting to do something that I love, something that I'm into. My brief has always been to myself, I want to make something that I would watch. And so I thought, well, hey, why don't I pitch the idea of a Doctor Who companion show? Went into the ABC and they said yes straight away to it.
They didn't argue about it at all?
No, they said the only thing was we had to get permission from the BBC. So even though the credits said, hosted by Rove McManus, head writer Rove McManus, original concept Rove McManus, they couldn't say produced by, my company couldn't produce it because we were using the BBC's program to talk about. And so, yeah, basically they just said, we'll get on the plane, because they were off to renegotiate their contract with Doctor Who. So they said, when we go talk to the BBC, we'll put this on the table and make sure that either they're okay with it. And the BBC, yes, they said fantastic, and gave us a lot of help with getting the show up and running, because obviously we needed to get episodes in advance, well in advance. And they were very, very good at sending screeners to us and allowing us to know what was going on. So it was 3 years of, like, just joyous. I did some of my favourite television to make. Our studio audience, if anyone listening to this is one of the many people who came in week to week, big shout out to the Newcastle Doctor Who Society in particular. But that was, it was like a party in there every week. It was so wonderful. We'd bring the audience in. They would watch the episode that would be going to air. So they would watch, we would put big screens out. They would watch the episode of Doctor Who. Most of them, it was the first time they'd seen it, because we were recording usually a day or two before the episode went to air. Then we would come out, and then we would straight away record the show. And then usually we'd all hang around for another half an hour or so afterwards to talk with the audience about what they thought. And there was always a huge line to get photos with the cast, with our TARDIS that we had on set. And it was so, so much fun. Yeah. Except the only thing was, I always knew what was happening, because we were, it was always the toughest part for us was to be talking about an episode and then trying to make assumptions about what could happen next week, where this plot could be going, who do we think's in the vault, that type of thing. Knowing full well, we've seen the next two episodes and we know who's in the vault, but trying to remind yourself, where was I when I watched this, and what did I think, what was my theory or my hypothesis at the time I watched this, rather than when we would record the episode. But yeah, it was a pretty easy sell. They were on board and the BBC was on board, which was wonderful.
Hi! Mom! Yeah. Hey, here's a fun fact. This week I found the bidet. Hi, guys. If you're the type of person who sees nothing wrong with a grown man walking out of a blue box, then welcome. You're at the right place. This is Whovians!
Now, one of your guests you had on was Jason Hay-Guillory.
Yes.
Now, I know Jason's a friend of yours. Yes. Yeah, the creator of Big Finish, and of course we have a lot to do with Big Finish.
Yes.
How did you first meet Jason?
I met Jason through my brother-in-law, who is an actor, and Jason has a very big career in musical theatre, which some people might not know about. So he had been part of some productions here in Australia, and so my brother-in-law had met him that way. And at one point just went, oh, I've been meeting this guy. He's a big fan of Doctor Who. We should go out and catch up sometime. His name's Jason. I was like, oh, great, cool. He said, he didn't quite know what Jason did as far as, he had no awareness of Big Finish or what it meant. So when I met Jason, it was a very unique name. So when he introduced himself, I was like, oh, you're the Big Finish guy. So, so then we hit it off and, we've kind of just stayed friends ever since. So whenever he's in town, we catch up via Zoom maybe once a month, once a fortnight, depending on how busy everybody is. Went to his wedding at the start.
I was going to say, his wedding hit all in.
Yeah. So
you obviously knew Big Finish from Jason. So yes. How did you come across Big Finish?
I was listening to, there used to be an Australian podcast called, I think it was just called the Doctor Who podcast, which was Australian. So when I was in the States in particular, it was my way of finding out about what was happening in the world of Doctor Who.
So is that the Doctor Who show with Rob and Dave?
No, not that one.
Different one?
No. They shut it. They don't do the show anymore. There was four of them. I think it was four guys. They had a segment on their show that reviewed Big Finish. So they had two of their cast members would review Big Finish audios. So that's kind of where I became aware of it. And just, I think it must have been Storm Warning. I remember they were just raving about,
Paul McGann's back.
Paul McGann is back. And also, it's a great story. And having heard them review so many titles, and I was aware of it, but I kind of was just sort of, I'd let it wash over me. It was just a something I saw it as like, I don't know, the Doctor Who Adventures novels or the comic books. And similarly, if you're into anything like Star Wars, for example, like it's a similar. There's so many extra worlds you can really dip into. I just thought there's so much Doctor Who anyway with the TV show and enough materials. I had subscribed to Doctor Who magazine, and so I had enough to sort of keep me happy. And the show was back on air that I didn't feel I needed to be delving into the alternate timelines. It's canon if you want, but it's not. And knowing that if you go in, it's a deep dive. It's a very, very deep pull. But there they were raving about, the Paul McGann episodes, stories. I remember thinking, oh, geez, well, these must be pretty good, because sometimes I'll just listen and go, yeah, that was good. This one was nice. Recommend this one. But they were really raving about it. So I remember thinking at some point, I'll do that. And then Jason sent me, of course he did, because he's smart and knows how to market. I got the...
So you were friends with Jason by this stage then?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, no, sorry. No, I wasn't. No, I wasn't by that stage. Sorry, I take that back. It was because it was the time of the 50th. And I was just taking in as much Doctor Who as I could. And Big Finish had released, is it Light at the End?
Light at the End.
Yeah. And a multi-Doctor story. And I thought, well, look, that's a reason to get something from Big Finish. I want to hear what they're doing to celebrate the 50th. Bought it on CD, I think. Mm. Listened to it, really enjoyed it. And so then, oh, maybe I'll find something else to listen to. And that's when I went to Storm Warning and then Chimes of Midnight, because they were the two other ones that I knew were very good. And there was something about, well, I'll just do the McGann stuff, because the idea of companions between companions of,
That's a stupid idea.
It was just, I thought, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds with, well, here's a companion of the sixth Doctor that, we didn't know, or the fifth. They would have had Tom by that stage. But the idea of, I've seen the start and finish of the Doctor's era.
And there were no companions.
And there was, when this person left, that was it. There was no adventures in between. It's a straight line. That was harder for me to sort of deal with. So I just went, well, McGann's, his is kind of off to the side, so I'll go listen to those. And, of course, they're incredible. So I was in New York and bought them specifically because I was doing a long drive while I was over there. So I thought, oh, well, this is a good reason to listen to some Big Finish. And I remember listening to the Chimes of Midnight and actually pulling over at one point. I went, oh, I need to actually properly take this in. And loved it. And so, now I just, if there's a title that I love, or I'm interested in the idea of the war doctor ones, some of the out of times I got, and then same thing, I also got the Sixth Doctor regeneration story because that was another milestone. Yeah. And then listening to where Colin was at with the Doctor on Big Finish, I went, oh, that's kind of, I like that. And I've always had a soft spot for the Sixth Doctor. So then I was listening to a bit of those and similarly felt like, well, yeah, his adventures were a bit incomplete. So I can similarly...
So you better dip into
those. I can listen to those because, again, it's not so rigid as some of the others. If Evelyn Smythe is coming in, well, sure, I could see how, there's enough gaps in between the Sixth Doctor era that this would make sense. And now I just, pick and choose. I'll just randomly just suddenly go, oh, I think I like the idea of, the Unbound War Sixth Doctor sounds like an interesting idea. Let's do that. Or I'm loving the early War Doctor Begins series. And obviously Eccleston coming back, I lapped those up and got into some of the bigger McGann, like Stranded and Ravenous titles, because I'd heard great things about those as well.
Yeah.
And then every now and again, just Jason will send me stuff in the post, and I've just got a slowly building library for something that I said, I'll never get into that.
Good. So you did appear in a Sixth Doctor story.
Indeed, I
not
did.
Too long ago.
Yes.
Whose idea was that? Was that Jason's idea, or did you have a get in his ear?
Well, I'd always, I think, less than subtly said, hey, if there's ever a chance. And he would often say to me, just so you know, I've brought your name up and they're aware of it, and don't panic. But I think he was specifically trying to find... He knows I like the Eighth Doctor and the Sixth Doctor in particular, especially for Big Finish. So I think he was looking for something that would work with those. And I think as well, he was trying to find a nice major story to be involved in. So the idea of the Hebe companion coming in was the one. And it's an Australian, scripted as an Australian character anyway. So I think there was a little bit of, just in case... we're worried he can't do an accent or anything like that. Let's just make it a softball and just give him an obnoxious Australian to do. So, yeah, that's how it happened. And then it was written by Jack Rayner, who's, when I heard that, I was like, oh, my God, this is very cool. This is very cool. So I was very, very excited to finally get asked to do it.
So how, now canon. How did you record it? How did it all happen?
It was they sent through... the script, and then it's really the offer came. I could either record it at a time that works for me, and then possibly for me, because we were at the time in Australia, we could still head into studios because you were by yourself. It was okay.
Are you in Perth?
I was in Perth at the time.
So this is June COVID in Perth.
Well, there was no COVID in Perth, so they...
I was looking, no one was allowed in. No.
That was why they had their border closed. So it was, you could go into a studio and just record your end of things and someone can just read across from you, or we can get you with the cast, but it will mean you may not be finished till like 2 a.m. And I went, well, I have to do it with the cast, of course. And then we all got on to a conference call together, a video conference call, which was Colin's idea, just to say, hey, it would just be nice, because we're not all in the studio, it'd just be nice for everyone to see each other and get to say hi. So it was really just his idea to go, so everyone could get to see each other and say hi and introduce ourselves, and before we then just go into being blind and only hearing each other's voices.
Had you met Colin before?
No, I hadn't. And, he's... Colin Baker, he's the Sixth Doctor. You're doing a Big Finish audio drama that is his character. And he has very sweetly introduced himself. And his wallpaper behind him, his screen wallpaper, was one of his old publicity shots. So he said, oh, hello. He said, I'm the Doctor. He said, I'm Colin. I'll be playing the Doctor. And this is, that's what I used to look like. He's putting over his shoulder. And I didn't want to be a fanboy. So I did say, I I do know who you are, Colin, but that's very sweet of you. And then, you know, everyone's kind of just bouncing around. We're all just, you know, some of them had worked with each other before. So it wasn't very long. And then we got into it. So I'm recording in my, we got a spare room at home, and I'd made a, as best I could, soundproof booth out of big cardboard box, like packing fridge boxes, and then just bought some of that sponge insulation thing that everybody seems to have. And this is going off looking at every person's photos in Doctor Who magazine when they have the stories about, yep, here's the latest Big Finish. Any cast photos are usually, you can just see everyone's home set up. You know, there's David Tennant with a blanket over his head in a cupboard, or Peter Davison in the full outfit. But you can see, oh, everyone's just kind of got this pretty basic lo-fi setup, but it obviously seems to work. So I just made that for myself. So I'm sitting there with this box over my head recording my lines, and then I had to record them on my phone as well as a backup in case something went horribly wrong. And then I just said to my family, my wife and my daughter, at some point I have to scream because I'm going to get attacked by a giant squid. So just don't freak out, because they were going to go to bed. It was getting late. And I knew my big death scene was coming up. So I said, just please, I'm going to give it my all, because I don't pull back. So just
don't get to die in Doctor Who very often.
No, you want to make the most of it. And you imagine, okay, I'm being crushed. This thing is squeezing me. How would that be working? So it's not just, you want to really like it's constricting on you. But because each of us was kind of becoming taken over by this mysterious entity, and it was sort of sending everyone a little bit stir crazy. And, of course, Base Under Siege. It was great. It's like ticking all the Doctor Who boxes. It was really about the first character who was overtaken by this bacteria, this alien entity in the water. Spoilers if you haven't heard it. We just followed her lead as to how we were all meant to play it. So she kind of went really, I'm going quite mad, and there was this weird sort of eerie giggle that she was putting into her laugh, and it was really intense, but worked quite well. So then everybody after that was just kind of following suit. I was last, so that I just dialed it up to 11 and kind of, because I had this big scene where I'm holding the Hebe character hostage and mocking her, and I really wanted to ramp it up to just make sure that when the character gets his comeuppance, he was pretty obnoxious anyway, but I just wanted there to be no question that you're happy that he's gone. So I just really went with it. And because I can't see anybody, I've just gone for a take. And by this stage, as everyone else has finished, and when they finish, they just say goodbye and then they log off once they finish their last scene. So it's me, Colin Baker, Bonnie Langford, and that's it. Oh, and I forgot her name now, who plays Hebe. She'll be coming up in the 60th as well. So it's just the four of us, but basically it's the main cast, oh, and me. And then here's my big moment, and there's no one else in the supporting cast for me to feel that I've got, you know, some kind of camaraderie with. It's now just me just doing my thing for the main core cast. And, oh, my God, one of them happens to be the Doctor. And I've just gone for it. And then there was this silence, and I'm just waiting. And then I hear the director say, well, I think that's all we need. We're not going to get any better than that. And then someone else said, can you cut that and save it? Because they were all just raving about me just doing this delirious rant at the end of the piece.
It's normal stand-up comedy, isn't it?
Well, that's it. Also, I do a lot of animation voiceover, so I perform. I don't just read the lines. If there's a performative element to it for me, it is voice acting, as opposed to a voiceover. So when I finished, I said, "Oh, thank you very much," and I said, "Look, now that I'm done, I just wanted to say, Colin, you are my doctor. You are, you know, that's, I grew up watching the show with you in particular. And so it's been an honor to be able to work with you today. And thank you to everyone for having me. And I'll leave you to it. Thanks very much." It's like 2 a.m. I'm very tired. And they were like very gracious that I'd stayed up. And then right as I was about to finish up, Colin said, "Oh, just one, Just one last thing before you go. Do you steal every scene that you're in? Which was one of the greatest compliments I think I've ever received. I don't know if it was a backhanded compliment or not, but I will take it as like, oh, wow, that was right up there with the villains from Underwater Menace or Horns of Nymon kind of stuff. Like, it's right up there.
No! No! What did you do?
Don't know if it's got a name. Walking stick jousting, maybe? Thing is, I'm a marine biologist. I know where an octopus's weak spot is. Just between the eyes. Go and have a look.
No, 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 no. You've ruined it. You've ruined it all. Oh, he's dead. Oh, my poor man. What did you do to him? What did you do? Shh. It's okay. You're all right. Yes, yes, come here. Come here, give me a cuddle. You saved me. No. No. No.
So you're waiting for the call for RTD to go over and film with Susie?
Well, that would be wonderful. I'm still trying my... Look, I'll be honest. My big hope is that we can get Whovians back in some capacity as an official part of Doctor Who. One of the things I'd always tried to do was to get it aired in the UK. Because once it had aired in Australia and we had, I don't know what the window was, a three-month window on iView or something. But then it all went back to the BBC because they own the rights to it.
Has a show like Who's been done anywhere else in the world?
Not that I know of. Crystal D used to do the fan show on YouTube. So I was always saying, just put it on the official Doctor Who YouTube channel or something like that. From what I hear, people were finding it illegally because I know that there are people in the UK who knew about it. We got a write-up in the, I don't know what it was, 2019 Doctor Who magazine yearbook or something. So at the end of our second year, they came and did a story on the show, which ended up like being a four-page story in the magazine. So that's... Again, as a fan, that was just one of those a real genuine pinch me moment to go, wow, I'm in Doctor Who magazine is amazing. And then to get to do a big finish. So I would like to think we could do something that's officially linked with the show itself. I know it's a big ask, but I'm doing what I can at the moment. So we'll see what the future holds.
If it comes like unavailable. So
absolutely.
Need any help? Let me know.
Well, we always are looking for more people to come and talk about this wonderful show that we all love.
Great. Thank you.
And thank you both for having me on this wonderful trip to Hobart with Janet. It's not officially done yet.
No, it's not.
But it's been great. So thank you very much for having me.
Well, once again, thank you so much, Rove McManus. It was a privilege to be able to spend so much time with him, hang out as proper fanboys, Philip.
Yes, and share the odd bottle or two or three of red wine as well.
Oh, I was watching you too. There was one moment after you'd given him, I don't know how many glasses of wine, he just pointed at me and he said, Dwayne, what's your most interesting piece of Doctor Who memorabilia? And I couldn't say what it was because I'm not into memorabilia so much. I just collect the DVDs and video and, you know, Blu-rays and stuff like that. And he was very unimpressed, I must say.
Yeah, he was unimpressed with you. He really wasn't. I don't know what you're talking about. But certainly, personally, I have more memorabilia than you do.
Yes, you absolutely do. I've got my TARDIS cookie jar and my Dalek behind my shoulder, and look at you.
Yeah.
All right. So before we go today, just a couple of things. We've got some good episodes coming up. We have got some special things in the works coming up soon. If not next week, it'll be very soon after we've got our next Randomoids, which is, if you want to listen to these stories before you hear the episode, have a listen to the early adventures, the Ravelli Conspiracy. I think that's the right pronunciation of it. So that's First Doctor and Stephen episode. And Vicky, I think Maureen O'Brien's in it as well. And we're also going to be listening to the Sixth Doctor and Charlie story, Patient Zero. So that make sure you get your ears around those before the next episode of Randomoids. Yes, you. Oh, well, I haven't listened to him myself because what I'm listening to at the moment I'm about to recommend.
You want to recommend something first?
I do want to recommend something, but I checked my list and, Philip...
It's not your turn?
It's episode 150 and I thought I'd have a turn, but no, it is your turn.
Yeah, what a surprise. I am going to recommend an interview I heard for a podcast called Anything Goes with James English. I haven't actually heard any of his other interviews. He's an interesting Irish man. Pretty sure he's Irish with his accent. And it just popped up on my feed. And it's an interview with Noel Clarke. Noel, of course, played Mickey in the first couple of seasons of when the series returned and popped up again as a special guest in the fourth series. As you know, Noel Clarke had a number of complaints made against him, and it led to a BAFTA being removed from him. And he has been fighting the allegations for a long time. I was very much unsure in terms of what the details were. And of course, you know, we always want to generally support the victim, but it is important that we get to listen to both sides of the story. And it's a very long interview. I think it's over an hour and a half long, maybe it's closer to 2 hours, where Noel is actually talks in depth about the situation and what happens. And it's quite interesting. And I certainly feel for him because I actually feel like there might be been some injustice happened to him. So even though there was all these numbers named, from what I can gather, none of them actually came forward. None of them were actually properly named. It was just a source saying that there were all these complaints. And he has a story to tell in terms of someone who's, you know, gone after him. And can he be obnoxious and difficult? I suspect yes. He's honest enough to admit the fact that he does cause issues for people. And he certainly he's come from a very rough, very hard background. But it's been interesting to listen to the interview. So
he's a flawed human being, just like all of us are. We all have our different flaws. And as you said, it is very important to hear both sides of the story. So I would recommend that podcast as well.
Yeah. So, it's worth a listen. As I said, you can decide for yourself in terms of, you know, where you think he stands and whether or not he is innocent or guilty. I mean, nothing has gone to the police. Nothing's been legally, you know, he's not been accused of anything in any legal means. It's all been a judgment and fighting on Twitter and social media. So it's actually good to hear him talk at length about what happened, but also talking about his family and the effect it's had on his sons and his wife. So I'd recommend it's a listen. And as I said, whatever conclusion you draw, that's okay. But I think it's good to at least be able to hear him speak about the issues. So that's a bit serious, Dwayne. What about you? What are you going to recommend?
I'm going to recommend something that relates to a special that we're going to be putting out in the next couple of episodes, a special that is about 6 months overdue. We were talking about it last year and we still haven't put it out yet. That is the special feature on Sarah Jane Smith Series 2. So I've started my re-listen of those so we can do our little sort of interlaced bits between the interviews that we've got, because we've got interviews with quite a few. There wasn't as many people, there wasn't as many writers involved because there's only one writer for the whole series. So we've got David Bishop talking about each of the stories. We've got producer John Ainsworth talking about each of the stories. And of course, we can't do Sarah Jane Smith without Jez Fielder. So that's a special that we're going to be putting together for you very soon. So far in my re-listen, I've listened to the first two. Buried Secrets was the first one and Snowblind is the second one. And I can heartily recommend Sarah Jane Smith Series 2.
They're
if
fantastic.
You haven't heard it,
yeah,
make sure fantastic. You do. Nick Briggs, when he gets those human roles, I love what he does with them. He plays the baddie in Snowblind. Well, is he the baddie? Well, he plays a bad character in Snowblind exceptionally well. I enjoyed every bit of it.
Yeah, I agree. They're wonderful. I listened to them all before we did the interviews.
Yes.
And they're superb stories. I'm so glad we went back and have done this retrospective, and I've enjoyed them all the more.
Yep. All right, so that's my recommendation, and thank you very much for listening to our 150th episode. We'll see you again at episode 300, hopefully.
And for those of you in Brisbane, hopefully come and say hello in person, because I'm looking forward to meeting you.
Absolutely, because we've got one more show with Janet Fielding before she heads back to the UK. She's been having a great time here with her family, and it's been lovely to get to know her a little bit in person too. And, I just feel really privileged to have been able to have the opportunity. So thank you, Philip, for all the hard work that you've put into this series. And thank you to all those who've supported us by attending them.
That's for sure.
All right. Until next time, we'll catch you later.
See everyone.
This has been the Sirens of Audio episode 150 with our guest Rove McManus and your hosts Philip Edney and Dwayne Bunny. Original theme music composed by Joe Kramer. Our website is sirensofaudio.com. You can email us at sirensofaudio@gmail.com or contact us via any one of our socials. Thanks for listening, audiophiles. We'll hear you next time.